Blog Talk Radio.
From the Blog Talk Radio studios in Union City, New Jersey, Insider NJ proudly brings to you Politically Direct, and I am the professor, Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all here tonight, the 18th of January, folks, the year 2018. And, of course, I want to thank you for listening from wherever you are throughout the Garden State. Now, you can always write to the show's inbox, which is politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. You have a suggestion for a topic or a guest you'd like to hear on the show, folks, write to me directly, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Now, don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at politicallydirectnj. You can also follow me personally on Instagram at @your_favorite_Fernando. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Fernando Uribe Jr. Now, for all of you Facebook subscribers, please check out the official page for Politically Direct. Like it, of course, and ask you to tell your friends to do the same. Now, I do want to hear from you tonight, folks. Don't be shy and call me toll-free, 818-572-8032. Once again, toll-free number tonight, 818-8032. And our toll-free number is brought to you by Insider NJ. Now, don't forget to check out Insider NJ every day, ladies and gentlemen, by going to their main site, www.insidernj.com, for the best coverage of the political scene throughout the state of New Jersey. Again, check it out every single day, www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to like them on Facebook, and don't forget to follow them also on Twitter. Now, I do want to make you aware the opinions and views expressed tonight and every week on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalists, or the staff. Folks, again, I hope you're all having a wonderful start to 2018. Of course, politics is always on the menu here, so let's get started with the first shot. Now, 2017 was quite a year in New Jersey. We saw the election of a new governor, a government shutdown during the summer, debate started as it pertains to legalizing recreational marijuana, the prospects of New Jersey becoming a sanctuary state, and, of course, the end of Governor Christie's second term. Now, like a lot of New Jersey residents, we just want the Garden State to remain affordable. Right now it isn't, and that's a serious problem. Now, whether it's here in Hudson County where I'm living at, or it's down the shore in Long Branch, or on the outskirts right outside of Atlantic City, we're moving in a direction that represents a lot of uncertainty for taxpayers here in New Jersey. Now, listen, I don't have all the answers, and I'm not going to lie to you. I may not have them all each and every week. Now, some journalists and commentators claim they do, but even that's suspect. But I can tell you that hopefully we'll find the solutions together. And that's what the purpose of Politically Direct is for here, ladies and gentlemen. So again, I have to, right from the onset, I have to thank Insider NJ for believing in my abilities tonight, each and every Thursday night here at 8 p.m. for bringing you this show. And I'm hopeful that this podcast will be something that will be a regular thing for each and every one of you, again, here on Blog Talk Radio, courtesy of Insider NJ. And as I said, it's important that we try to find solutions, folks, because we owe it to ourselves and our children. And that's the first shot here on Politically Direct. Now, again, ladies and gentlemen, feel free to call in tonight, 818-572-8032, because I'm going to hear from you tonight about what's on your mind about everything going on in New Jersey, whether it's politics, issues involving your community specifically. I want to hear from you. So, again, toll-free number 032. And as always, toll-free number is brought to you by Insider NJ. Now, folks, what I want to be able to do on the program each and every week here is certainly tackle the biggest issues concerning New Jersey politics. And, of course, be using Insider NJ as our guide here with the exceptional journalism that we've come to know and expect from Insider NJ and some great articles that we'll be breaking down, as well as other news sources throughout New Jersey. And, of course, there's a lot to talk about in 2018. And one of the things I wanted to sort of start off with, folks, in a great article, as a matter of fact, coming up on this past Tuesday on Insider NJ during the news portion of it. And, again, for any of you that watch the hearings on television, it was interesting because, again, great article published on the 16th on Insider NJ. The impassioned one, the junior senator from New Jersey, Cory Booker, criticized the president's Homeland Security chief on live television. And, you know, it was a very interesting article, very brief. I know that Insider NJ was able to provide the footage of it. And it was interesting because, you know, we saw Senator Booker literally sort of go off the rails on Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen after she claimed ignorance as it pertained to President Donald Trump's quote, and I hate to use the word, but we'll have to use it anyway, quote, shithole countries remark that was made during a White House meeting among a bipartisan type of collection of elected officials in the Oval Office. And again, a good job by Insider NJ publishing the footage there. And I have to tell you, you know, when I watched this, I'm not going to lie to you, I watched it a couple of times. I watched it a couple of times because at first, like anything else with the headlines, it certainly was very bombastic. It was very, very impassioned by the senator. But, you know, one of the things that really bothered me about this was sort of the, I think, that sort of the disingenuous nature of the rhetoric that I heard. And listen, we can certainly have a debate about the president's comments as it pertains to his perception of certain countries and what effect that will have on immigration reform. And again, I'm not here to sort of debate that. That's a topic for another day. And we all know that, you know, both Democrats and Republicans were in the Oval Office when allegedly these comments were made by the president. Certainly it's created a lot of hysteria on the news cycle. It has certainly generated a lot of debate on social media. And so Senator Booker wasted no time during a Senate hearing to address Secretary Nielsen in a very sort of, I would argue, very disrespectful way. And the reason I took offense to this is because, you know, we're living in a climate now where we're seeing that acts of impropriety towards women are pretty much in the headlines each and every day. And rightfully so. I mean, there's a lot of unfortunate incidents taking place in the workplace in every profession. But I found sort of the sort of the backlash and sort of hysteria to be a little, I think, inconsistent. And I'll tell you why. Because I looked at Senator Booker and listen, the guy is oftentimes on the right side of a lot of issues. I'll be the first to tell you that about Cory Booker. The guy genuinely cares about New Jersey, just his counterpart, the senior senator, Bob Menendez in the United States Senate. So, you know, I'm not here to sort of engage in a character assassination of Senator Booker, but with this specific incident, it really didn't sit well with me because I feel that the liberal mainstream media really, I think, has been running with this and has been really blown it out of proportion. And again, if you have had a chance, again, great article by Insider NJ this week to highlight Senator Booker's outrage as it pertained to the president's comments. And, you know, again, you know, folks, let's be real about something. Let's think about this in realistic terms. Let's not live in a bubble. And, you know, we know that the backlash was certainly not very heavy on Senator Booker as it pertained to his tone, as it pertained to talking down to Secretary Nielsen. And listen, whether or not the mainstream media has an agenda in sort of giving Senator Booker a pass, well, we can debate that. But let's think about this for a second. Just imagine one moment, folks. Just imagine for one moment that a Republican United States senator was sitting in a Senate hearing talking down to the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, and it's a woman. Can you imagine what the headline would have been on the New York Times the following morning? Could you imagine what the headline would have been on the Star Ledger? Could you imagine what the headline would have been on CNN? It would have been just absolute hysteria. And this is where I think a lot of people, and not just in New Jersey, folks, but throughout the country, I think regular mainstream Americans like myself get turned off by the mainstream media because they don't see a consistency. Because, again, I would – you know what? I'm willing to say right now, I would be willing to burn one of my Dallas Cowboys jerseys right now if you're going to tell me, and folks, call in and debate me and challenge me on this assertion. You can call in tonight again, toll free. I want to hear from you, 818-572-8032, because I want to hear from you tonight. That just imagine for a moment, had Senator Marco Rubio from Florida, the Republican, okay, or a plethora of other Republican senators would have taken that tone, would have used that sort of openly hostile type of rhetoric to the Department of Homeland Security secretary, much less a woman. We all know that it would have been a headline in every major news publication, both in print media and online. So who are we kidding here? You know, let's stop with the inconsistency. Let's stop with sort of, you know, the selective memory. We all know that this wouldn't have happened. So, you know, again, I've met Senator Booker. He's been a gentleman to me. He's always answered my questions. He's always been very receptive to conversations with me. So, you know, again, he's been a gentleman with me. But on this specific issue, folks, let's be fair. Senator Booker got a pass here. Because we all know if a Republican had done this, we know what would have happened. We know this Republican would have been crucified. And we've seen it before. So, you know, one of the things that is important to keep in mind, folks, and this is one of the things that I want to sort of get right from the onset here on Politically Direct, is the fact that you're going to hear the truth here on this show. Because I'm not a conservative. I'm not a progressive. I am a regular, mainstream, independent voter who just looks at things in the most commonsensical and the most objective way possible. Now, you can disagree with me, and that's fine, and we can have a dialogue and a debate about it. But, folks, on this specific issue, I find it hard to believe that, you know, again, certainly the senator is entitled to express himself during a Senate hearing. He's entitled to express anger. But, folks, you know, read some of the comments online. Read some of, you know, the sort of the feedback in social media about this. Folks, this was grandstanding. This was nothing more than grandstanding. Now, whether Senator Booker is using this as an audition to be a primary candidate in 2020 for the Democratic Party, we don't know that. I know a lot of publications around the country scripted it this way. I know others in the mainstream media sort of dismissed it. But I'll tell you something. This was something to keep an eye out for because, you know, again, I watched it three times. Because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't imagining this. I wanted to make sure that I wasn't sort of fabricating my own outrage unnecessarily. And again, you know, the senator's entitled to be angry. The senator's entitled to voice his opinion. I don't want it to, however. But let's be fair also. This, you know, there just wasn't an outrage like I would expect it to. Again, if it had a Republican senator done this, we know what would happen. It would have been CNN would have been having a meltdown for the next 24 to 36 hours. It would have been a meltdown on MSNBC. It would have been a meltdown on the New York Times, the Washington Post. Almost every single component we've been seeing is, you know, it's kind of interesting in the way that it's being portrayed. So, you know, sort of interesting article here, I would say, probably, if you haven't had a chance to check it out on Insider NJ's page. So definitely browse it when you can, folks. Again, www.insidernj.com. Another story this week published on Insider NJ I wanted to sort of talk about a little bit that really I would say was very descriptive and very, very accurate was by a fellow columnist on the staff here, by Mr. Fred Snowflack here today, shortly after Phil Murphy was sworn into office as it pertains to taking the oath of office. You know, very interesting words by now Governor Murphy as it pertained to the direction he wants to take New Jersey in, effective immediately. And it was one of the things that I know that Governor Murphy used this term quite often during his inaugural address. And it pertained to, quote, great things that are coming for New Jersey. And it really, I think, set the tone for espousing a specific philosophy that he's looking to employ in these next 4 years as the governor of New Jersey. And a couple of things that came to mind for me when I heard, you know, the governor's inaugural speech. And again, a good job by Fred Snowflack of Insider NJ in really breaking down the governor's inaugural speech. And a couple of things I sort of wanted to run by you. Again, if you didn't have a chance to check out this really great article, I do suggest you do so. Again, when to insidernj.com to really, you know, get a sense of what direction the governor is moving in here. And one of the things early on that the Governor Murphy outlined were his priorities early on, that he was going to explore them in next month's budget address. But on some of the issues, he certainly didn't want to wait on Tuesday when he took office. He had urged Democratic lawmakers in both the state assembly and the state Senate to quickly send him a bill to restore state funding for Planned Parenthood and women's health initiatives, legislation that I know that in both terms for Governor Christie, he consistently vetoed. And again, during the speech, the governor wasn't done. And a couple of things I sort of wanted to make, sort of outline tonight that concerned me about this speech, because, we're looking at Planned Parenthood, a nonprofit organization, to the best of my knowledge. And listen, let me be very clear, because I don't want anyone to misconstrue my words tonight. I don't want anyone to, misrepresent what I'm saying here. I very much am an advocate. I very much am a proponent of women's health initiatives. I engage in a lot of philanthropy throughout the years to promote women's health, to raise money for women's causes. So that's near and dear to me. I have a mother. I have an aunt. I have a grandmother. I have friends of mine with their own mothers and sisters, aunts, et cetera. So women's health initiatives are extremely important. But one of the things here in New Jersey, folks, just like the rest of the country, what doesn't sit well with a lot of taxpayers, and I'll say this for me as well, is, there are a lot of other nonprofit organizations that advocate for women's health initiatives and women's issues, and they don't take taxpayer money the way Planned Parenthood does. And I've talked to a lot of people, a lot of doctors, a lot of healthcare professionals here in New Jersey, and this is a conservative or progressive, look for folks. But one of the things that turned me right from the get-go was looking at, well, how much do you want to put an emphasis on in terms of taxpayer dollars as it pertains to Planned Parenthood? Because, folks, listen, I can give you a couple of examples, whether it's the American Cancer Society, whether it's other nonprofits, okay, that focus on women's health. They don't take anywhere near taxpayer money that Planned Parenthood demands every year. So again, and there are taxpayers in New Jersey that quite frankly don't like the mission statement of Planned Parenthood. They don't like their tax dollars being used for it. And I would argue that if Planned Parenthood is very serious about furthering women's issues, they can raise money on their own. I don't understand why taxpayer dollars have to be used for this. Now, I get it that more often than not in New Jersey, it's perhaps the most densely populated state in the country. So I get it that we have to maybe take that into consideration. And I know that Governor Murphy is trying to cater to a more progressive audience now, because that's the direction that New Jersey is moving in now as it pertains to his administration. But folks, I'll tell you, a lot of taxpayers in New Jersey feel that their tax dollars should be used for this. And I'll be the first one to tell you, I'm one of them. And again, that doesn't make me some, heartless or unsympathetic man to women's issues. No, it's on the contrary. I give a lot to women's health initiatives every year. I raise money for it. So I'm the first one to tell you that it's important to do that. But we can raise money in our own way. We can certainly rely on fundraising like other nonprofits do and do very successfully. I don't see why Planned Parenthood should be any different. So, it'll be very interesting to see as it pertains to the legislature whether or not Governor Murphy's going to get his wish to A, fund Planned Parenthood and other women's health initiatives. Now, again, we can debate on another day whether or not the governor is, going to be right on this. And we're going to see how many legislators are going to be on board with him. And we'll find out. Now, a couple other things during his inaugural address that I thought were very interesting, and I think it's worth discussing tonight, folks. It's certainly he was looking to quickly sign any bill that would raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour in New Jersey and certainly guarantee equal pay for women for equal work. Now, I'm going to dissect it in some way. I think they both have different issues that are outlined here. Let's look at this from a very commonsensical point of view, folks. The $15 an hour type of rhetoric resonates well during campaigns. We've seen it in not just only states like New Jersey, but also in New York, states like California, states such as Washington, also in Oregon. And I get all this. Okay. I remember growing up as a kid, stocking shelves in a grocery for well, at the time, minimum wage was $5.05 an hour, so you can probably get an idea how old I am. But the point is that certainly with time, the minimum wage has increased. Folks, this is an issue that I think concerns a lot of us. And I feel for a lot of my friends in New Jersey who are small business owners, okay, when you look at big corporations such as Walmart or Sam's Club or even Staples here in New Jersey, for example, we're looking at larger corporations that can absorb that type of hit with raising the minimum wage, okay, and sort of, and paying that as compensation for its employees. But folks, this is the problem, okay? And you know, besides doing what I do philanthropically, I'm also speaking as an academic and as a professor in higher education. I've had this discussion numerous times with my students about the minimum wage, and this is an issue here, okay? When we look at the minimum wage was established for the implementation and the usage of minimum skills. Now, if you want to have a discussion about a living wage and allowing people to not struggle financially in New Jersey, we can have that conversation too, ladies and gentlemen. But as it pertains to a minimum wage, what you're doing by raising the minimum wage is you're hurting a lot of small businesses in New Jersey that, quite frankly, may not be able to pay these wages and thus lay off employees. Their productivity may suffer, and therefore that specific small business may either suffer or go under altogether. And we don't want to see that. I don't want to see that. But one of the things that makes the minimum wage argument complex is, I'll give you an example. Most people don't know this, but the average salary of an EMT technician or worker, however you want to classify the job title, in New Jersey, and again, I last researched this for the show, was around 29 and change a year, almost $30,000. Okay, now if you're working a basic 40-hour work week, ladies and gentlemen, do the math. You're talking around almost $14 an hour, maybe a little bit over. Fair to say that an EMT worker, with the amount of responsibilities, with the amount of headaches and pressure that that job title entails, they are certainly more deserving than $14 and change an hour. What you're trying to push now with this rhetoric of $15 an hour for a minimum wage is now you're going to say to people, okay, that if you're working in retail, you deserve just as much money as an EMT. If you are working in either hospitality or in the fast food industry, the service industry, you deserve as much as an EMT worker. That's just ludicrous. And again, folks, if you want to debate it, I'm more than willing to hear your case tonight. So, again, call in 818-572-8032. Again, the toll-free number brought to you by Insider and Jay. Folks, again, I can't say it enough. It's not a realistic expectation to raise that because, listen, New Jersey is unaffordable. We get it. We've heard this for years, whether it's now Governor Murphy or his predecessor, Governor Christie, or his predecessor, we know these things. We know they exist. A little alarming, and I found it a little bit funny when I would see this being mentioned. Again, a good job in the article here, again, by Fred Snowflake from Insider Range, one of our great columnists here, really breaking down what, you know, this agenda is going to be. But folks, you know, looking at this and really, to me, my goodness, it's, I think we have to have a serious conversation about either making New Jersey more affordable in some which way or fashion. But this rush is to say, well, let's just raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour, and that's going to fix everything. No, it's not. Again, big corporations can absorb this sort of hit, folks. But once it trickles down into small businesses, it just doesn't work. And I can tell you it doesn't work because we've been seeing it fail miserably in cities like Seattle. We've been seeing it fail miserably in other parts of the country because what's going to happen? We're going to see small businesses cut their workforce or even local corporations cut their workforce. And you know what? It's the sector, the free market, okay? If you want government to regulate business, well, then maybe you shouldn't live here. You can move down south if you want, you know, down in you know, South America. I hear that that's working really well in Venezuela or other parts of the world if you want government to regulate business, but that's not the way it works here. And I want people to understand that because I think that we get so wrapped up with this crusade about the minimum wage. And folks, listen, I'm going to tell you right now, I don't have a definitive answer. I can't wave a magic wand. But I can tell you, we have to sort of look at this with a little proof and a little diligence if we're so adamant about raising the minimum wage. Because I'm going to tell you something, it's not an end-all be-all. We've seen it fail miserably in other parts of the country, and I would be surprised if it fails here in New Jersey. It seems destined to do that because of the precedent we've been seeing all around the country. Now let me transition to another part of Governor Murphy's speech about equal pay for equal work as it pertains to women. Listen, I'm gonna say it again. I'm going to be very clear so it's not misrepresented. I very much would like my female colleagues in my occupation to make sure that they earn the same that I do. Okay, if we're doing the same amount of work, we should be paid the same. There's no question about that. And I get it that was a very symbolic gesture on Tuesday as one of his first acts as governor was to sign, to law, the aspect of equal pay for equal work. And the problem is this, that all of these talking points sound great on, during the campaign. It sounds great during a debate, and it sounds great to get votes. But folks, the problem is that, again, maybe some of you have never heard of Google. Maybe some of you have never heard of history books and have been able to look at this. But the Equal Pay Act in 1963, which was signed into law by President John F. Kennedy, okay, made this the law of the land. And I want to read this to you because I think it's important that people understand this. Because it just seems like, this sort of, Google Gaga display that went out on Tuesday was, I think, very misrepresented. Now, again, let me be very clear. I very much want my female counterparts in any profession to earn, deserve, okay? But, folks, it's not difficult to look up, okay? It's on the EEOC website. Again, if you go to www.eeoc.gov, that's the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, it clearly outlines the Equal Pay Act of 1963. Now, whether or not it's being implemented or it's being implemented fairly, we can have that discussion. Okay? We can have that discussion, and I'm willing to have it with you. But this idea that, just let's just sign an equal pay for equal work, law to effect here on my first day as governor, I get it. It was a great gesture. But folks, it's not something that's not already on the books. Now, whether or not it's enforced correctly and whether or not it can be fine-tuned, certainly we can do that. A lot has changed in the workforce since 1963 when President Kennedy signed this into law. But, I think it was just another symbolic, gesture on Inauguration Day to just sort of – I hate to use the word pander because I don't want to sort of come off as negative here. But I have to be realistic and honest, folks. It looked like pandering to me. Because, again, it's not hard to Google this stuff. And I get it that a lot of us here in New Jersey have very short memories. We have very selective memories. We don't like to look at. We don't like to read sometimes. We don't like to look up things. When I heard that on Tuesday, I said, wait a minute. I've heard this before. I've read about this before. And sure enough, all it took was 2 seconds to go on Google. And I was like, yep, that's right. I remember this. And I learned this in college. It's not like this is like some, advanced history course, folks. And this is something you can learn in college during your undergraduate studies. So that was very interesting by the governor to bring that up there. And a couple other things here that I thought were interesting on Fred's article this week covering the inaugural address by the governor was also looking at, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, also looking at the possibilities of making New Jersey a sanctuary state. Now, listen, I'm going to be very clear in my opinion here, folks, and I want everyone here to not misrepresent what I'm saying, okay? Now, I, like many of us tonight listening, proud son of two very hard-working immigrants. My mom, who left tyranny and oppression from communist Cuba, and my father, who left Colombia, at the time was quite an impoverished country. They left respectively. They came here legally. They went about it the right way. They worked hard. They built a life for themselves, built a life for me, like tens of thousands of other hardworking immigrants that come here each and every year to the United States. So let me be very clear that as the son of an immigrant, I would certainly not want to sit here today and even sound as if I'm anti-immigrant, because I'm not. I certainly understand the struggle. I start with my parents. I've seen it with other members of my family. I've seen it with friends and their family members. So, you know, we can have a conversation, and I think this is where it gets lost, and I think this is where perhaps Governor Murphy might run into a little bit of a roadblock with the legislature, okay, when it comes to a sanctuary state and his desire to make New Jersey a sanctuary state. Let me throw a couple of things at you here, okay? I don't know how many of you have traveled outside of New Jersey. I know I have. But I can tell you that the last thing I want New Jersey to be, because I was born and raised here, I love New Jersey, I never want to leave New Jersey, this is my home. But the last thing I ever want New Jersey to be is another California, okay? Now, this is my friends in California. I have friends, some live in Bakersfield, some live in San Francisco, some live in Inglewood, some live in Orange County. I know plenty of people that live in the Golden State. The last thing I want New Jersey to become is another California, because we're seeing it in the flesh of what's going on in California. Now, I don't know if that alarms you, but it certainly alarms me. And this is one of the things that feels that maybe could be a very significant roadblock for the governor as it pertains to the legislature. Let's keep it real tonight, folks, and let me paint a picture for you that hopefully, whether you're here in Hudson County where I live, or again, you're down in Central Jersey, or you're down right in Camden County, right on the outskirts of Philadelphia, okay? One of the things that I think that Governor Murphy is going to have to really come to grips with as it pertains to immigration reform, and specifically this desire for the sanctuary state type of model or paradigm that he's pursuing, is this. This rhetoric goes off really, really well here in Hudson County, okay? Here in Hudson County, it's a predominantly, if not entirely, a very Hispanic-based population. Here in Hudson County, the most densely populated county in the state, if not perhaps the country, okay? Where I would say 90% of the residents here in Hudson County are Hispanic, okay? That rhetoric might resonate really, really well, folks, about making New Jersey a sanctuary state. I know one of our mayors here in Hudson County, Stephen Fulop in Jersey City, has declared Jersey a sanctuary city. I know that other mayors here in Hudson County, such as my mayor and State Senator Brian Stack, have made Union City a welcoming city. I know that the newly elected and newly sworn in mayor in Hoboken, Ravi Bala, has made Hoboken a welcoming city. I know some elected officials throughout the state have been very careful in the way they use that word. Folks, let me paint a picture for you, because while Governor Murphy has control of both chambers of the legislature, remember, Democrats outnumber Republicans by a significant margin in both chambers of the legislature, okay? Now, that talking point about making New Jersey a sanctuary city, hey, that is like music to the ears of a lot of people here in Hudson County. But do you think moving a little out west into Bergen County, do you think moving down into Central Jersey, do you think just because your name has the letter D next to it that they're going to be on board with wanting to make New Jersey a sanctuary state? Do me a favor, folks, and sort of think about this idea in your mind. Think about going into Bergen County. Think about trying to convince some of those Democratic legislators in those districts in Bergen County and convince them that, hell yeah, you know what? Yeah, I'm all aboard for making New Jersey a sanctuary state. Let's move down to Central Jersey. You think Democrats in Central Jersey, whether it's Middlesex County or, I don't know, Somerset County, or even further south, you think even down in Gloucester County, do you think that just because you're a Democrat that you're automatically going to be on board with making New Jersey sanctuary state? It's not going to happen. It just isn't. And I can tell you this because I know it on good information from people that I know that work closely with legislators, not just in Hudson County, but I'm talking about the state, that would tell me to my face and say, you know, Fernando, I don't see this happening. I think the governor is going to face a lot of opposition on this. And quite frankly, you know what? He should. I don't want New Jersey to become another California. I don't. Have you seen the economic state that California is in right now? The homelessness rate and how it's going up? How everything else, I mean, sort of the fiscal oblivion that California is heading in? I don't want that. here in New Jersey. And listen, let me be very clear. That doesn't make me a racist. It doesn't make me a bigot. It doesn't make me prejudiced against Hispanics or immigrants because, number one, again, I'm Hispanic, so I don't even want to hear that characterization. And number two, I'm the son of an immigrant. Okay? But folks, but at the same token, we got to be a little more realistic here. And again, I find it hard to believe that the governor is going to get that unanimous support from Democrats all throughout New Jersey. It's just not going to happen. It just isn't. So when I heard that during the inaugural address, I was, wait a minute, like, is this really happening? I was sort of baffled by this. I really, really was. I was baffled by the fact that this was even being suggested or even still, being proposed during his inaugural address. Now, a couple of other things during the address that caught my eye, of course, Governor Murphy went on to say that he opposes any oil drilling off the Jersey coast and, of course, is looking to fight the Trump administration in Washington as it pertains to its efforts to deport, quote, dreamers and to cut health care for children. Now, one of the things that I found interesting about some of the rhetoric during this inaugural address is it's not surprising. I mean, certainly positions that then-candidate Phil Murphy ran on. So it's not a surprise to hear them during his inaugural address. And, one of the things, folks, that, I'm not being a partisan here tonight. Again, I'm not a conservative. I'm not a progressive. I'm somewhere in the middle. I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I'm independent. I mean, I'm someone that I think is like many others in New Jersey, okay, that try to look at issues on a case-by-case basis, all right? And we're looking at an extraordinary amount of issues that are going on here in the Garden State. And listen, I just want to say that I very much want to see Phil Murphy succeed. I don't want New Jersey to continue going off this fiscal cliff. I'm not one of those partisans that's going to say, you know what, I hope he fails. I hope he just falls flat on his face. No, I'm not about that. That's not productive, folks. That's not, conducive to trying to find solutions. And that's one of the things here, ladies and gentlemen, that I want to sort of emphasize to you tonight, because every Thursday night here on Politically Direct, the purpose is to have a dialogue, to find solutions about making New Jersey better. Certainly in the coming weeks, I'm looking forward to having some guests on. I'm not going to give any spoilers out just yet, but we'll have some great guests coming up in these next few weeks here as Politically Direct continues to grow here on Blog Talk Radio, courtesy of Insider NJ. And, one of the things that I want to really emphasize here is about thinking critically here, not just thinking emotionally, because I think we tend to do that way too often when it comes to issues like this, whether it's about addressing women's health initiatives or whether or not to make New Jersey a sanctuary state or whether or not to raise the minimum wage to $15. I mean, these are all issues that we can sit here and we can dissect and we can analyze and we can really break down intelligently. But one of the things that I would argue is you need to do and do it constantly is again, think critically. Put our heads together, and that's what I'm hoping that the governor and that's what I'm hoping that he and the legislature will do. Folks, listen, I'm a homeowner and taxpayer like so many of you listening tonight, and I appreciate all of you listening tonight. And I can tell you that I just want New Jersey to be affordable. I don't want my taxes raised. I don't want tolls going up. I don't want the gas tax to go up any more than it has. I want my home state to just try to be affordable or, not become more expensive in the sense that I've known so many people that are just looking to move out of New Jersey because it's just becoming so expensive to live here. And I feel awful for a lot of people because there are people who are lifers here that want to retire in New Jersey, but they can't. And they're not going to be able to. And you know what? As far as I'm concerned, let me tell you, I'm hoping that the governor and the legislature can work on this. I'm not going to be one of these people that says, that I want Phil Murphy to fail, that I want Phil Murphy to, not live up to promises or to help New Jersey residents along all economic lines. I want that. I certainly do. But I'm not going to lie to you today, folks. Some of the things I hear, during this inaugural address and a great breakdown again here on Insider NJ by Fritz Noflack during his analysis it concerns me. It concerns me. You know, and one of the things that, you know, again, I also heard in during his inaugural address is, you know, sort of one of the things on his wish list was a free community college education for New Jerseyans. Well, listen, that's a great goal to have. But how are you going to pay for it? How is it going to achieve that? That has to come from somewhere. Okay? And that comes from either raising taxes or generating revenue. And we'll talk about generating revenue because I know that's one of the big focal points of Governor Murphy's agenda in these next 4 years about making New Jersey affordable, about trying to, you know, raise money to fix deficits in our educational systems based on taxes on the wealthy and other things that we'll get to in a moment. But I'll tell you, it's one of those things that, as far as I'm concerned, you have to wonder if the numbers add up here in terms of what he's looking to accomplish. You know, and there was a quote again in the article here by Fred that, and he goes on to write, quote, Murphy was raised in Massachusetts and was a small child when John F. Kennedy occupied the White House. So Kennedy references coming from the governor are no surprise. He quoted both Senator Robert Kennedy and the president in today's address. In paraphrasing President Kennedy, Murphy wanted to say that he has an ambitious wish list. Quote, that it's not easy because it's hard. And Kennedy made the reference about doing hard things when talking about putting a man on the moon, and that was done. Now, listen, sure, it took the nation less than 10 years to actually put a man on the moon, as then-President Kennedy promised. Now, school funding and property tax reform has been the talking point for years in New Jersey. It really, really has been. And what we do about that, quite frankly, remains to be seen. Now, again, do we need more state money for local schools? Yeah, absolutely. And by raising revenues in certain aspects, could that theoretically reduce property taxes? Because that's where the money comes from, right, to pay for our schools. Well, we'll see. And listen, there's no guarantee that a local district receiving more state aid is going to use it to reduce taxes. We don't know that. It could always be used to expand programs, to hire more staff. Who knows? So, you know, listening to the governor's inaugural address, hey, I know a lot of people sitting there on Tuesday after 12 noon, he took the oath of office on a Bible from President Kennedy, that he was the same Bible that President Kennedy swore on when he took the oath of office, which was kind of ironic, I thought. You know, it remains to be seen of what's going to happen. But I'll tell you this much, though. A lot remains in terms of how everything's going to get paid for and where we're going to get money from. All right? And folks, you know, listen, if you have any thoughts about the governor and his first few days and the direction that New Jersey is headed in, you know, want to hear from you tonight. Call in 818-572-8032. Want to hear from you tonight. So, okay, don't be shy. Call in 818-572-8032, toll-free number, as always, brought to you by Insider NJ, the best source for political news in the Garden State. You can check them out at www.insidernj.com. Now, speaking of raising revenues and trying to net that gap that exists in the state budget, you know, one of the things that I thought was interesting this week when Governor Murphy took office, and it was a very interesting, as I was sort of reading the my news feed since Tuesday, you know, one of the biggest campaign talking points for then candidate Murphy was this emphatic call for legalizing marijuana in New Jersey and his plan to legalize marijuana for recreational use was a hot topic during the campaign season as he was campaigning against then Lieutenant Governor Kim Guadagno. And this is something I wanted to address with you tonight because I think it's important to really, in a way that hopefully appeals to everybody across all political aisles. Now, one of the things that I learned doing my homework this week, again, in a good article that I came across this week on NJ.com that broke this down, I believe, yes, it actually just came out, as a matter of fact, today, this afternoon, I was reading it on NJ.com from a good author by the name of Claude Rodisser Ackner, who works for NJ.com. And it was interesting because the governor's plan to legalize marijuana here in New Jersey is already facing some opposition from state lawmakers. And specifically, we know it's coming from Republicans, but we know it's coming from within his own party. Now, certainly while Democrats hold the governor's office and a majority in both chambers of the legislature for the first time since 2005, my estimation from what I've been told in terms of numbers, about half a dozen Democratic state senators told various news outlets in New Jersey this week that they plan to vote no on any bill legalizing pot for recreational use by adults, which leaves its future, and, you know, what an ironic term to use, cloudy to say the least. Now, some of the state senators here in New Jersey that have hinted at emphatically about voting no have been state senators Joseph Vitale of Middlesex County, Ronald Rice and Richard Cody, both from Essex County, Jeff Van Drew of Cape May County, Shirley Turner of Mercer, and my own state senator here in Hudson County in the 33rd Legislative District, Brian Stack here in Union City. Also, another pair of Senate Democrats, State Senator Sacco out of North Bergen and James Beach of Camden, have said that they're willing to consider decriminalization, but they're not ready to vote yes on a recreational marijuana bill. Both state senators cited concerns ranging from unintended social justice ramifications to public safety on roadways. Now, a couple of facts, folks, that I think you should be made aware of. Democrats hold a majority over Republicans in the state Senate by a margin of 25 to 15. Despite having this majority, only 21 votes are needed in order to pass the bill and to get it to the governor's desk for signature. And that means that Democrats can afford to lose the support of four of their own before they try to secure any Republican support in Trenton. Now, this is my thing. And I was talking about this on my local podcast that I do here in Hudson County on Wednesday nights, Talk on the Hudson. If you have a chance, folks, check it out online. They'll really, really like it as well. I had State Senator Stack on my show last week, and we had a very healthy discussion about the ramifications of legalizing marijuana. And this is where I stand on it. Again, folks, if you have your own thoughts and opinions about legalizing marijuana here in New Jersey and the pros and cons, again, do me a favor, call in 818-572-8032. I'd love to hear from you and love to hear what you have to say about this very controversial issue, because it's not going away anywhere. And it's something that, quite frankly, could really stall in the legislature in the many months ahead here in New Jersey. I'm going to put it like this to you. A, I've never smoked marijuana. B, I don't care to. C, even if it's legalized tomorrow, I'm still not going to be interested in smoking marijuana, because it's something that, it doesn't appeal to me. Okay? Now, this is perhaps the libertarian in me coming out when I say that, hey, whatever you want to do with your body is your business. Okay? I certainly don't like government being involved in a lot of our personal choices. Okay? And I know that there has been a considerable debate about the impacts of legalizing marijuana. But one of the things that State Senator Stack told me last week on my local show, and he said to me, Fernando, and I'm sort of paraphrasing here, Fernando, I'm concerned about not just the perception that it gives off to young children in New Jersey, but also the impact on the quality of life in our municipalities. And that was a very interesting take by the state senator, because he's also a mayor here in Union City, which is, again, one of the more densely populated municipalities in all of New Jersey. And I can tell you that State Senator Stack, and also as the mayor here, has done quite a good job in closing down a lot of very shady bars and establishments here that draw a certain type of element to these venues. And he's done a good job in trying to minimize that and improve the quality of life here in Union City, for example. And he's also been a proponent about that in his own district here in the 33rd District, which encompasses Union City, Hoboken, Weehawken, and parts of the Jersey City waterfront, and also part of the Jersey City Heights, for any of you that are familiar with Hudson County. Now, he said to me very emphatically, Fernando, I just don't feel right about it right now because of the message it gives off. And also, very much, and also in the similar way that State Senator Sacco just mentioned about issues involving, driving and sort of the impediment that might contribute to on the roads for motorists. And those are all things that come into mind. And folks, listen, commend State Senator Scutari Nicholas Scutari, who I know introduced the bill, and he's hoping that it passes. I know he led a delegation to the state of Colorado to study the practices and sort of the methodologies that were employed in the state of Colorado shortly after recreational marijuana was legalized, I believe in 2015. And again, it's only been a few years. The data isn't accurate yet, or it's still not conclusive. Okay. Now, there's no doubt whatsoever that it has raised an enormous amount of revenue in the state of Colorado. And credit the legislature in the state of Colorado for wanting to use that revenue to address issues involving infrastructure, to help poor school districts, without raising the taxes of residents throughout the Rocky Mountain state. So I applaud them for that. My issue here, and again, I don't want to sound like I'm being overly draconian or overly traditional, and you know, forgive me if I sound like that, but I think I'm just trying to be a realist, folks. I don't really care about marijuana per se. It doesn't affect me in any capacity. I don't have an affinity for it. You know, if you ask me, I'd rather have a glass of wine when I'm home. That settles me down after a long day of teaching at the collegiate level or just doing research or writing. I'll have a glass of wine or two at home, relaxed in my own home, not bothering anybody. That's fine. What I'm starting to see, ladies and gentlemen, is this idea that that this is potentially harmless, that this is going to be something that is not going to be chaotic. It's not going to be problematic. There's nothing but pros about this, and there's no cons attached. Now, let me say this. One of the things in the bill that I know State Senator Scutari introduced as it pertains to decriminalization was looking at expunging records for those that have been arrested due to marijuana possession. Now, let me say this. Before getting into academia and teaching in higher education, I worked in our criminal justice system in New Jersey, folks, for 10 years. I worked at different agencies. One of the things I noticed early on was that disproportionately in New Jersey, both black and brown people have been victimized by our criminal justice system, by these unfair drug laws, and by the consequences that are inflicted upon them as a result of these drug laws. Let me paint you a picture, because I remember for many of you listening tonight, when you went to college, wherever that was, for undergrad or grad school too, we all had those friends that like to smoke marijuana, and that's all well and good, and I had them, okay? I still have some friends that do that, which is fine. But I can tell you something, that there was always that risk, and I always mentioned to them, I'm like, you know, you got to be careful when you're doing this. You got to be careful if you're going to do it on campus or on your off-campus apartment or wherever you're at. It's not going to take much for that joint to ruin your life. Again, I don't want to sound apocalyptic or that I'm preaching a doomsday scenario. But folks, what we've been seeing in New Jersey is this just, I think, ridiculous practice of the penalties being inflicted on people because of low-level drug possession, such as marijuana. Okay, if you're a student in New Jersey and you're caught with marijuana and you're arrested and you're prosecuted or you plead guilty, you will lose any access to financial aid. We know that higher education in New Jersey is super expensive. Once you lose that right or that access, excuse me, to financial aid, you're in serious trouble. Okay? Once you're arrested, you could potentially lose the right to vote in New Jersey. And why? Because you had a low amount of marijuana on you? Folks, if we're going to really focus on serious drug offenses, it's not marijuana. So I applaud State Senator Scutari for incorporating that into the bill, because guess what he's doing? He's trying to move towards decriminalization. He's trying to move towards expunging records for low-level offenders and not having that ruin the rest of their lives. Again, access to financial aid, having that on their criminal record. And what can that possibly do? That could stop them from getting a job or working. Is that what we want for young men and women, specifically young men and women of color? Because I can tell you that black and brown people in New Jersey have been victimized by these drug laws, okay? And it's unfair, and it's wrong. And applaud the senator for that. I think that certainly that is one of, the better elements about this bill. But I can tell you right now, that having spoken with State Senator Stack here in Hudson County. I have also spoken with State Senator Cunningham in Jersey City on my local show as well last year. I can tell you that they are two preeminent and very vocal members of the New Jersey State Senate, and they're still not sold on it. But I can tell you that despite having a majority in the State Senate, I don't see a recreational marijuana bill passing in 2018. I think that was one of the biggest misconceptions, folks, about Governor Murphy taking office. And most people that, you know, once, you know, he took office and people were excited and people were, you know, in jubilation. Oh, I'm so excited. You know, marijuana's, you know, the governor took office on Tuesday. Well, marijuana is going to be legal by Thursday. And I think that whether people are just naive or people are just ignorant and they don't want to read or they don't want to educate themselves on this, folks, this is a process. This is a process. It's going to take a lot of study. It's going to take a lot of examination. And you can't rush something like this because once you open the door, you can't close it again. And that's one of the things that I feel is important for everybody to listening tonight to the broadcast, that this is going to take a lot of time, effort by both parties in New Jersey, okay? And it's going to take a lot of work by Democrats in New Jersey to sort of come to a consensus of, okay, what are they going to be doing? What are they going to be doing to address this? Because there's no doubt that the potential revenue with legalizing marijuana is there. And that money seems very tempting. It's something that, hey, as a homeowner and taxpayer, if you're going to tell me that you can raise revenue somewhere else and not raise my property taxes, hey, I'll be doing cartwheels, okay, in my house. The problem is, folks, that there's still some serious issues to address with this. Applaud the governor for trying to find different revenue streams and not just say, well, listen, I'm going to have to raise your taxes. I mean, that's great that he's not saying that. Folks, at some point, this is something that has to be looked at seriously. I think we need to look at it from not just a policy perspective. I think we have to look at it from a criminal justice reform perspective. And also, we have to look at it from a quality of life perspective. And again, this might be another roadblock that the governor hits during his first year here in Trenton. Listen, the easiest part is campaigning, right? The easiest part is winning. Now it's time for governing. And I think that's one of the things that perhaps Governor Murphy is going to, I don't want to say hit a roadblock with, because it sounds very pessimistic. And again, let me be very clear, as I said to you before, I don't want to sound partisan here. I very much want the governor to succeed. I want New Jersey to be economically viable again. I don't want to see friends of mine moving out of New Jersey because it continues to be unaffordable. Do I want overly liberal policies that could possibly bankrupt the state? No, I don't want that either. But I think if the governor can work with the legislature, I think there could be a consensus about where this can go. And I think where this is going to, again, I would argue, can make New Jersey more economically competitive. And, you know, one of the things he said in his inaugural speech, and I remember I'm sort of paraphrasing the governor, but he said, you know, I want you to plant your flag in New Jersey. And I can, listen, when I watched his speech, I could tell he was being sincere. I think he genuinely cares for New Jersey. I think the governor genuinely cares about the welfare of every New Jersey. Let me be very clear about that. My issue and my concern, like many others in New Jersey, is how are you going to go about it without making New Jersey economically vulnerable? I think that's a legitimate beef on my part. Again, this is, you know, I'm not talking as a Democrat or a Republican or a progressive or a conservative. I'm talking as a regular mainstream independent voter here in New Jersey because, quite frankly, hey, it's a new administration. I don't want to sound cynical, okay? We had 8 years of Governor Chris Christie. And I'm not going to badmouth the guy. I don't want to do that. Not because he's a fellow Cowboys fan, but, you know, he came in with a lot of promise. A lot of things were left unfulfilled with Governor Christie. And, you know, looking back on these 8 years, I'm trying to remain as positive as I can. I want to be open-minded about this new governor. I want to, you know, listen, I want to cheer him on and say, I hope he succeeds. I hope he succeeds in making New Jersey better for all of us, for every single New Jerseyan, black, white, brown, Asian, rich, middle class, working poor, everybody. I want New Jersey to succeed. And if the governor is willing to work with the legislature and vice versa, I think it's possible. I don't know if it is. We'll see. It's going to take a lot of restraint, I think, on the part of the legislature. I think they too have to be economically responsible, which I think we can make a case that for a long time that has not been the case here in New Jersey, because what's happened? You know, spending's gone up in New Jersey. Property taxes have gone up. We've seen the creation of more government instead of less government, which is what we don't want. But we'll find out. We'll find out again in the coming months and again in this term for Governor Murphy. Folks, a couple other things I want to run by you tonight. Again, listen, call me toll free tonight. I want to hear from you. Anything that I talked about tonight that interests you, maybe you agree or disagree, I'm all ears. So call in 818-572-8032. Toll free number again, brought to you by Insider NJ, your leading source for New Jersey politics online by going to www.insidernj. A couple other interesting articles here, folks, on Insider NJ's website again. And I can't say it enough. I urge you, if you have not signed up yet for the morning intelligence briefings that will be delivered, community to your email every single morning. Do me a favor. Again, go to Insider NJ's page, insidernj.com. Sign up for it. I read it every morning in my email. It's the best political news anywhere in New Jersey. I don't want to sort of throw anybody else under the bus because that's not what the show is about. But I can tell you that since its inception in February of 2017, folks, no one has tackled the political scene in New Jersey like Insider NJ. So if you have not made a habit of it, I would hope that you do that because it's something that's definitely worth looking at here. A couple interesting articles here by our lead columnist and lead journalist here at Insider NJ, Max Pizarro, a friend of the show, who I'm also looking to have in the coming weeks ahead to as a guest here. So stay tuned for Max, and we'll definitely have a great conversation. I know Max was fortunate enough to hit the big tent and the inaugural ball at MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford on Tuesday night. And I know that, there hasn't been a lot going on in MetLife Stadium lately, you know, anything exciting for some time. So I'm sure that the owners of MetLife were happy to see the buzz that took place on Tuesday night as it pertained to Governor Murphy's inaugural ball. But it was interesting by Max to sort of report on some of the appearances there in MetLife Stadium. Of course, we saw Newark Mayor Ross Baraka, who is up for re-election this May. We'll see exactly what type of competition he'll be facing in New Jersey's largest city as he seeks another term in office as mayor. We also saw some other luminaries from throughout New Jersey. We saw State Senator Ania Gill from the 34th Legislative District. We also saw Assemblyman Gary Shayers roaming around the premises at MetLife Stadium during the inaugural ball. I know former Speaker of the Assembly and Hudson County Assemblyman Vincent Prieto from the 32nd District right here next door made an appearance, and also, of course, State Senator Joe Cryan from the 20th District was able to come out and make an appearance as well. We also saw luminaries from all over the state. We saw Essex County Executive Joe DiVincenzo on the premises on Tuesday night. And certainly, listen, you know, it was a packed house, to say the least. We saw a considerable buzz as it pertains to the enthusiasm for Governor Murphy. I know that at the inauguration ceremony with his wife and children, it was quite a sight to see. You know, listen, and again, I don't want to sound partisan here, but you always look at those moments and you feel happy for the families, you feel happy for the wives and the children who sacrificed so much during the campaign season for their fathers and their candidates. You know, so that was interesting to see as well, sort of the jubilation there in the Murphy family. But I'll tell you, it was one of those things on Tuesday night. I mean, it was to say the very least, it was quite the congestion at MetLife Stadium there. So good job by our lead journalist and columnist here at Insider NJ, Max Pizarro, sort of working the room and talking to everybody there. Of course, I know that Max is highly regarded and respected because of his work. So I know that anybody who was anybody was definitely talking to Max on Tuesday night during the inaugural ball at MetLife Stadium. Folks, a couple of other interesting tidbits here I sort of wanted to run by you. And one of the things that I think you'll be happy to know. Insider NJ coming up on Saturday, January 27th. Insider NJ will be hosting and moderating the 7th Congressional Democratic Candidates Forum at the Flemington Elks Lodge, which is number 1928, again, in Flemington, New Jersey. Again, Insider NJ will be moderating this primary candidate forum coming up, and it is also hosted by the College Democrats of New Jersey. So for those, any of you living in the Flemington area and you're looking to check it out, very interesting congressional race this year, folks, here in terms of the Democratic candidates. I think you should definitely check it out. Again, for more information, go to Insider NJ's page, www.insidernj.com. Again, a very interesting Congressional Democratic Candidates Forum coming up next Saturday, January the 27th at the Flemington Elks Lodge. So definitely something worth checking out for those of you in South Jersey and are curious about that very interesting congressional race coming up this November here in New Jersey. On a lighter note, and certainly something that he probably didn't expect now that he is no longer governor and as pretty much a civilian now. He's a regular New Jerseyan like everybody else, except that he just has state police protection around the clock. But interesting article published today, again, in Insider NJ, great, again, best news source in New Jersey. Very interesting story that former Governor Christie was blocked at Newark Liberty International Airport today as he was boarding a flight. The governor tried to circumvent airport security and received a personal escort to the regular entry point for passengers at Newark Liberty today. And it must have been quite a humbling experience for the governor, who's been a very polarizing figure in New Jersey, to say the very least. So, again, I don't know if you had a chance to check it out here. A good article, again, on Insider Today. Apparently, being governor is really very yesterday for Chris Christie. Unfortunately, the former governor learned the hard way that his special treatment in New Jersey is indeed over. Now, according to reports, Christie tried to circumvent a TSA checkpoint at Newark Liberty International Airport today in Terminal C. Christie was with his state police detail and attempted to enter through a special access area located near the exit of the restricted area of the terminal. Now, the Port Authority says one of its officers refused to let Christie pass, telling the former governor that he is no longer allowed to use that access point. The officer then escorted Christie to the regular entrance. Christie cooperated as instructed. Now, New Jersey governor, again, for those of you not aware, and again, a good job reporting this today, New Jersey governors have the option to have a trooper protect them for 6 months. Two previous governors and Christie have opted to exercise that option. Now, apparently, Governor Christie, on his Twitter account, called the story, quote, pure fiction. On his Twitter account today, he wrote at 6:09 p.m., absolutely false story about my travel today. New Jersey State Police security detail and I were led to one entrance in the airport by Port Authority Police Department officer. TSA informed the Port Authority and the New Jersey State Police that this was the wrong way to enter and directed us to another entrance where I was screened and admitted to the airport. Neither option was the way I entered the airport as governor, which was also wrong in the story. And Port Authority police officer never denied me entry at either place, which is also wrong in the story. He was a gentleman assisting my security detail. When he got the right info, he took me to the right place. Pure fiction. Now, again, I don't know whether the governor's just trying to, you know, engage in spin control, but I can tell you that was probably one of the more humorous headlines today on the news cycle here in New Jersey as it pertained to Governor Christie former Governor Christie traveling today out of Newark Airport. And certainly, you know, good job today by Insider NJ reporting about this. Actually, they were one of the first ones to break the story today pertaining to the inconvenience suffered from, you know, by former Governor Chris Christie here at Newark Airport. So, folks, you know, again, some interesting developments really going on. And one of the things, folks, and you know, this is something that I want to be able to really – you know, emphasize with you tonight, ladies and gentlemen. I hope that it's a little after nine tonight in the evening here. And again, I want to thank you for joining me tonight. And I do want to sort of emphasize, folks, that, you know, if you believe that there's light at the end of the horizon, if you believe that good days are ahead of us, then you come to the right place, because that's what Politically Direct is going to be about. It's about projecting positivity and also realism into our analysis and our commentary about what's going on in New Jersey. And quite frankly, you know, it's amazing how this hour has just flown by here tonight. And I'll tell you, it's something that we're hoping to have happen every week here. So again, folks, don't forget that, you know, every Thursday night at 8 p.m., you can listen to the best analysis and commentary about everything going on in New Jersey, whether it's politics, community, or anything else. You can always hear it here on Politically Direct. Now, again, don't forget to check out Insider NJ every day, ladies and gentlemen, by going to www.insidernj.com for the best coverage of the political scene, again, throughout the state of New Jersey. Now, if you missed any part of tonight's broadcast, folks, you can always go to www.blogtalkradio.com/politicallydirectNJ. You can do so from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. Now, if you have a topic or issue or some general feedback about the show, this week's premiere, or about anything else you want me to cover in the upcoming weeks, again, please write to the show's inbox, which is politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Again, don't be afraid. I'll certainly answer each and every email and respond to each and every question or comment. Again, I look forward to reading all of them. You can do so, again, right to the show's inbox, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Now, don't forget to follow the show on Instagram, @politicallydirectnj. You can also follow me on my own personal Instagram, @your_favorite_Fernando. You can also follow the show and me on Twitter, @FernandoUribeJr. Now, don't forget to like Politically Direct on Facebook, ladies and gentlemen. I really appreciate it. And let me be very clear. Whether it's on your morning commute, getting that daily workout in, walking your dog, you're doing your laundry, starting your semester off for my students, both past and present, tune in each and every Thursday night at 8 p.m., and you'll be happy that you did. Because it's real, it's here, it's Politically Direct. Good night, New Brunswick, the home of my alma mater, Rutgers University. I'll see you here next week, folks, on Blog Talk Radio, courtesy of Insider NJ. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.